What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Amanda Morrison as we sit down and talk about an album that reignited a career of a band going stale, Green Day's Nimrod. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Everybody, welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here on the Because of Your Network. Hope you're doing well this week. And this week I'm joined by Amanda Morrison. Amanda, how you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's nice to have a new voice on here. Gets a little stale sometimes.
Thanks for having me.
Not a problem. Amanda is a big Green Day fan, and she's going to be here to talk about one of their greatest albums. And before we get to that, go check out our archives, becausemovienetwork.com. That's where you find every episode of every show that we've ever done, ever, across all of our platforms. Go check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for our latest news. And don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. That's where you'll find this very podcast. Of course, if you're not listening to it on one of those, that's where you'll find us if you're a Pandora person. We're over there, okay? So, this week, we're going to be talking about Nimrod by Green Day. What is your opinion of this straight up first away?
So, I do really love this. Now, I will admit I'm not as familiar with this. Like, Dookie is like the quintessential Green Day album for me. But, But as far as if I try to just look at Nimrod alone, I do think it is a great album. So as long as I don't try to compare it to Dookie. But yeah, no, it's a good fun listen. I haven't listened to it honestly in so long until I decided I was going to do this with you. And so it was kind of nice to revisit, for sure.
Yeah, I was listening to it today before we were recording, and it's got similarities, but it doesn't have similarities. It's, you know, it's a long album, but it's a short album too at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like there's, what, 18, 17 songs on there? But they're all short and sweet, so yeah.
Yes. So, for all the music nerds out there, this album came out on October 14th, 1997. So that's a good start for it already, because a lot of good stuff came out in 97. That's probably the peak year for entertainment in the 90s.
And I was the ripe old age of 6.
There you go.
This is working out well.
Got number 10 in the Billboard charts. Only did number 11 in the UK charts, which is... not that great, to be honest. I mean, UK albums, it's a top 10 thing rather than a top 40 thing. So,
What were they competing against? What was going on in the UK at that time that they couldn't break through?
At the time, you had the Spice Girls, you had Blur and Oasis and Pulp were releasing albums. So it's the big Britpop movement.
That's true.
So, but at the same time, it only sold 3 million copies worldwide. So,
yeah,
it struggled a little bit, probably because of expectations, because people wanted the new Dookie, and they didn't get that. I mean, even Insomniac, when it came out, wasn't what they were looking for.
Yeah, that's always the double-edged sword of having a hit like that. So,
well, let's look at this real quick because, excuse me. They released Insomniac in 95, and it didn't do well commercially. And the band knew it wouldn't do that commercially. So that's ominous for a start. I mean, just imagine...
Yeah, I think it's... Was this like a love letter, like they were doing it for themselves? Or like, was it just they didn't like the way, you know, the producers and everything was...
Well, I think...
Was scripting it.
I think it was the sound...
Yes, okay.
Because there's a very, very pop-punk sound in Dookie and a very, very pop-punk sound in this album, too. But Insomniac didn't have that. It was more...
Like, more like the 1999 or 1989 album. Yeah, that's true.
So they chalked that one down to experience and started enjoying their fame, although they didn't enjoy a second of it. They were becoming the thing that they hated, playing those big arenas. It was beginning to not be fun anymore. Which a lot of people see. A lot of people go into music for the art of music, and a lot of people go into music for the fame and the fortune and everything like that. And a lot of the bands that were out in the 90s, especially from over this side of the world, they just wanted to be musicians. They didn't necessarily want to be famous.
Yeah, they wanted for their music, but they didn't want to actually have to be the people behind the music, I feel like, in a way.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to have to, like, perform live for a lot of people.
They wanted to make the music that they wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing more, nothing less. And that's how a lot of them just didn't want to be, like I said, just didn't want to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
So they canceled.
Is that like a Gen Xer thing of just like not wanting to be visible?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean,
anyway.
Yeah, that's because the millennials of the day were like, yes, let's be visible as much as possible, you know. But the mm-hmm. especially over here, Gen Xers didn't want to be bothered.
Right.
Because a lot of the British Gen Xers were like, no, look at me, I'm superior to you in every way possible. I make great music, just look at me, you know.
That's true. That is a very like distinct line between the Brit pop and punk pop,
Punk pop didn't want to be noticed. Brit pop was look at me. But they cancelled the band cancelled a European tour for the Insomniac tour because they wanted to spend more time with their families, because they weren't spending time with their families now that they were doing these big arenas, and you know, just they'd had enough, basically. They wanted to go home, and so they did. They went home and began writing material, and by the time 1997 rolled around, they had at least 12 to 15 songs in their repertoire that they were ready to go. So they called upon Rob Cavallo, who they thought was their mentor, and went back in the studio. Now, for an album with the songs as short as they are, 4 months is a heck of a long time to record.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, it's that's the best way to put this. You could have done 30 to 40 songs in the 4 months that it took them to record this album. Especially at the level that they were making music.
Yeah. Yeah, I honestly never, like, until I started reading your notes, I didn't realize it took them that long to record this album, because it's perfect in its sound of, like, it just thrown together. Of course, how every, pop punk sounds. But it's crazy that that much time went into it. But I'm sure on the heels of Insomniac, they wanted to. Yeah, and there's all these other issues too, I'm sure. But,
well,
that blows my mind.
Well, their issues took place at the hotel. Like, Trey Cool throwing his TV out the window. Mike Dirt running through the hallway naked.
Oh, I forgot that was famous era. Yes.
Yes. And that's
every band has those stories, I feel like, but
usually they do that on tour, though, not when they record an album.
Well, they don't want to go on tour.
Yeah, right. Well, part of the reason it took them long to record it is because they were playing too much foosball and pool too at the hotel. So it was a pain to get them into the studio to record. They maybe worked for an hour a day, and then they go back to playing pool and throwing TVs out of windows.
Oh, well, that sounds like my kind of work motivation. that tracks. But it is funny. And is it because they weren't touring, or they didn't have the desire to do that? They had felt like they had to still get this rock and roll behavior out there.
Well, you gotta remember, right? Up until American Idiot, they were just playing around the whole all the time. Even when they brought up Warning a couple of years later, they were still just, you know, little boys playing around and doing little boy things, and you know, just having fun and not taking it seriously.
Right, because like I really kind of discovered Green Day after Warning, right? So because I was like finally old enough to really listen to Green Day, and so. For me, I think also I tend to kind of lump a lot of this together just because, you know, this was the whole discography when I discovered them. And yeah, you're right. It was a complete, and I wasn't sure if it was just a me thing, but obviously it's not, that American Idiot was such a shift.
Yeah.
So yeah, they were kind of just like trapped in this. Yeah. Like they just wanted to be teenagers having a good time playing music. So yeah.
And a lot of the pop punk acts were like that. I mean, mm-hmm. Blink-182 were like that. They started to be more serious after they'd done all their, you know, cartoony stuff. And it's just a thing. They grow up one day when they hit, I don't know, their mid-30s, and they think, oh, I think it's time we need to make more serious music. And mm-hmm. that's where American Idiot comes from, as opposed to this album.
Right. Or there's enough external influences that they feel like they need to use their voice for something, which definitely is, again, American Idiot. But
yes,
whenever they don't have that, anything to like target them or, you know, to motivate them in a certain direction, necessarily, they're just kind of wandering in a good way. It's fantastic music, but yeah.
Well, lyrically, this album was a little bit more childish, but musically, it improved on what they had done originally. Somebody described it as more mature than what they'd previously done. And they drew inspiration from London Calling by The Clash as to the way to change their sound. Now, I'll be honest, I don't think their sound changed, but it definitely was tighter.
And there was a little more variance to it.
Yes.
It wasn't just scream at your face from beginning to end. Like, there was always some variance for good and for bad, as I know we will get to later.
Yes.
but yeah, like it was still every once in a while you're like, no, this sounds exactly the same. So it wasn't that drastic.
Well, Billy Joe Armstrong said that this is a record we've been thinking about for the past 6 years. We knew we wanted to change, but we didn't want to change too much too soon. The record's about vulnerability in a lot of ways, throwing yourself out there. Why the heck not put out the effing stupid argument? That effing stupid acoustic song. I'll play that stupid surf song. That's who we are. Why hide it? So he wanted to play a lot of different stuff in this album, and a lot of the songs do sound different to each other, but it's the ones that sound like Green Day sound like Green Day.
Yeah.
You can instantly tell who they are.
And it's like the ones that sound like Green Day are the ones that really stick with me. I'm right? Like, okay, yeah.
Who was on this album? Well, you got the band, Billy Joe Armstrong, Mike Dirnt, Trey Cool, and then you had Petra Hayden playing violin on Kitchen Ride and Last Ride In, and then you had a violin on Good Riddance by, it was Colin McCallum, and Gabriel McNair and Stephen Bradley played horns, and Dave Campbell arranged the strings. So
I do have to say, I loved the addition of horns. Like,
yes,
that was such of the time, and I loved it.
Well, okay, so we're gonna go in track by track, and for the record, yes, as people who regularly listen, just to make sure that they know, all the lyrics are written by Billy Joe Armstrong, all the music is written by Green Day, and the song meanings are provided by a combination of fan theories and what the band have said about themselves. So, I could be totally wrong with a lot of these things. In fact, I probably am. But a lot of the fans agree on some of these statements. So,
well, and I know there's just like a general argument that song meanings are what it means to the person, not necessarily even the intent of the writer. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but no. Because I 100% don't fully agree with that. But I know there are songs that are intentionally vague and there are songs that are intentionally not.
Yes. Well, I agree with that. I think it's up to the writer what the song's about.
Now, if they're okay with it being open to interpretation.
Yes.
Because
there's a lot of stuff that I listen to is not meaningful in the slightest. It's very shallow, but a lot of the fans think it's one thing and the writer's not criticized them, so... And a lot of the stuff I listen to, the writers, like, this is the best stuff that's ever been written in the history of music. So if they're letting people interpret it, that's a good sign. So,
right.
So first song on the album is Nice Guys Finish Last. So three chord rock in a punk style. Just simple Green Day feeling, you know, you've heard it 100 times before from the band. And
yeah. Okay.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just gonna say, like, this song, I feel like at first I was like, oh, this is not aged well, but then when you really get down into it, it does, and it's great.
Well, it's songs expressing a reader's feeling that nice guys are genuine people who rarely end up on top of life, which is, you know, the typical internet nice guys feeling too.
The incel movement, yes.
Oh, don't get me started on those people. They think shaking your hand means that, you know, that they're flirting or something. Yeah. Mm-mm. I don't like those people. But what he was talking about is the kind of people who pretend to be nice thinking they'll get far in life, but their true nature will be revealed sooner or later when they stop believing they could profit off of it. So
Precisely. Which is really more true, not maybe more true now than ever, because that's always been a theme, but in the age of the internet that we are in now.
Everything's exploded. everything's exploded because, you know, more people can hide behind a camera and a, you know, a little Twitter icon or Instagram icon or whatever, and they can just be themselves, as it were.
And which is scary when you see people's real selves.
Yes. Ugh. It's making me shudder. But he knows it.
Bringing the down podcast here right now.
Right. But he knows this won't work because his past experience of being a nice guy, and he now knows that acting like you're the authority is the key to ending up with anything in life. I don't agree with that. There is, okay, you can be a genuine person, but you don't be a nice guy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think if you come by being nice, honestly, then yes, you can get ahead that way. But I think maybe not authority. I think confidence is more really what it is.
Yes.
But not founded, like grounded. So I want to preface that. Because yeah, I agree with you. Like authority is a little much now. That's the part that doesn't really quite translate as well, I think, now in 2023. But yeah, like faking nice just doesn't get you anywhere.
No. Faking nice is creepy. Don't do it. Just be yourself. You.
If you remember one thing listening to this, don't pretend to be nice.
Don't pretend to be nice. Be nice, genuinely.
Yeah. Be nice genuinely or just shut up, please.
Yes. Amen to that one. But yeah, so it's not a long song, and a lot of these songs literally come in under 3 minutes. So it's just three chord rock and punk style, just what you'd expect of a Green Day track. The next track is something that you don't expect on a Green Day track, and that's like a Jewish style violin riff. I love Hitchin' a Ride. I really do. It's one of my top Green Day songs. I love the way it plays. I love the story of what it's about. It's for those who haven't heard the song. Starts off with like this violin riff and then goes into what I call a circle motion, where it's like three or four chords played very, very roughly, and it's talking about alcoholism, which is very near and dear to my heart.
Same here.
Right. It's a really, really good song, and it's underrated in terms of when people talk about really, really good songs, because it's not just a good Green Day song, it's a good song period.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think anybody can get the message about alcoholism and sobriety correctly, not just that, really can show all different levels of that. And it's a beautiful song anyway. I love all the layers to it. And that background of the chord progressions. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful song, and it's great. Yeah, like not even just as a Green Day song. But
well, he was struggling with his own sobriety at that point too. So, you know, he was, it's like he was reaching out to get, he's reaching out saying, I need help, or I'm trying, and this is my, like, not call for help, but this is what I'm going through, you know?
Right.
I mean, because he did have a legendary alcohol problem, but he is clean and sober from what I understand now. And you know, it's a hard topic to address, but if you know you have a problem and you're trying to fix it and trying to work on it, then that's something to, you know, to keep an eye out for.
For sure. And it's good to throw it out there to hold yourself accountable, and also just be a role, try to like start being a role model for others, whether that was his intention. I think more was the accountability side of it with this. But it's always good. Any kind of like mental health struggles, which, you know, in the 90s we didn't talk about, but now we do. Being forthcoming with that, any kind of substance abuse issues, anything like that, I feel like for him to do this in 1997 is huge. Yeah. And appreciate it. It's not just I drink too much because I party too much, like I'm too fun. Like this is a real deep down how he's feeling. And that is also a timeless struggle. So
yes.
I have to appreciate that.
All right, the next song is The Grouch. I'll be completely honest. This song doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't spark any emotion at all in me. Like, I don't dislike it. I don't like it. It's just a song.
I think it's fun. And I like it because there's parts of it I actually really identify with, because I am grumpy and I call myself a grumpy old man. I just want to sit and watch football and hang out with my dog and drink beer. But yeah, like the real big picture of it all, I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's
fun. I'm not going to take it seriously or say it's a good song. It's just a fun song. It's a Green Day song.
And yeah. I mean, it just starts off like a normal Green Day song and just, you know, starts off with the chords and the guitar and just, you know, him spouting about him being when he was young. And he had big plans, and now he's grown up. He's just an old man. And a lot of guys can what's the word I'm looking for?
Like relate to turning into their fathers when they really didn't want to. Yes.
every guy around about 30 to 35 turns into a grumpy old man at some point. And
it took me only 25. Yeah. But no, I do know what you mean.
Because we had, like, it's the normalcy of everything, right? There was still, there's a joke in the UK that people would roll up to soccer matches wearing full gear, you know, in case only 10 guys showed up and the coach needed somebody out of the crowd to come play for them. And, you know, some people still held on to that in their mid-30s, you know. Not being serious with that, but, like, you know, the attitude of, hey, I can still do this. I can still do what I want to do and be who I want to be, and Tom's on my side. And then when you hit mid-30s, it's like, yeah, I don't have time to do this anymore.
You either resign to it or you have a real bad midlife crisis.
Yes.
And then you resign to it. But
right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what he's talking about. He's constantly irritated. He's arrogant. The narrator's wasted his life away. Now he's stuck to resign to completely complaining about it. And he's got no will to live. He's got self-hatred. He's incapable of getting it on. He all he does is drink his problems away. Again, back to alcoholism. And he was reflecting himself. This is definitely Billy Joe Armstrong being Billy Joe Armstrong. This is who I am.
I mean, he's writing what he knows, and you gotta appreciate that.
But the good point is, the song expresses the message of not being afraid to face your fears and accomplish what you can while you're young. Because eventually you will end up as a grumpy old man who can't do anything. So this song was played in Australia on a TV show called... it was actually... The band did one of those Saturday Morning Kids TV shows. And they hijacked the interview, then took the house band's instruments and played this song. Yeah, they were,
this song, of all songs.
They were escorted from the building very, very quickly.
Yeah, no. I mean, I could see, like, I'm not trying to victim blame here, but, like, I mean, I'm a little bit like, why do they have to pick the grouch of all of them? But okay.
Right. Well, you know, it's again, as
we're literally talking about incontinence. Not incontinence, but yeah. Like, just being, oh my God. Anyway.
And now we've got Cartoon coming up with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. It's, but that is something they would do. That's the childishness inside them before they grew up.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. They're growing up, not growing up, but growing up at the same time. So I don't know.
Right.
Step forward, and we talk about Redundant. I love Redundant. I think that opening guitar riff is really, really, really good. And it's a slower song than normal, and. Yeah, it's just a really, really good song, and a lot of people can relate to it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we've all been in that relationship where you love each other, but you're just not good together.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And not just that as well. It's, you know, I love you's not enough, I'm lost for words, is a heck of a lyric. You know, it's...
Mm-hmm. That one gets me every time.
It's, you know, aside from love, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And if this even is love. But, yeah, two people have been in a relationship for a very long time, and they still love each other, but everything they do is redundant. So, you know, it's yeah, I don't know. It's the tune itself is fantastic. The lyrics are really, really good, and they go well together. And
they do. And I feel like this is as close to Green Day as can do to like a power ballad. In a way, like, it has the same feeling and the same like hurt, but they're not going to do a power ballad. But
they need some hairspray.
I mean, the lyrics to this are just so great.
Well, this song was inspired by his wife, which you know, and apparently the Grouch is inspired by his wife too, so maybe they were having a lot more trouble than was led on in the mid 90s.
Yeah, there may have been a lot more to the canceling tour situation than just, I mean, spending time with family is sometimes an indicator.
Right. But it talks about how the beginning of a relationship is exciting, but everything you do with each other slowly loses value over time and eventually becomes just normal routine in everyday life. And this is due to everybody taking each other for granted. The love is still genuine, but it doesn't hold any weight. So, yeah, I've heard of people saying, aside from love, what are we still doing together?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a tough one to deal with. Especially since love is all some people have.
Yeah, and that's the only thing keeping you together, but is that really enough, you know? Yeah, this and the Grouch together, there's definitely this overarching theme of just redundancy and being bored in the mundane every day. And probably part of, or at least trying to explain how that can lead, the boredom can lead to, you know, worsening alcoholism, because you see that a lot.
Yes.
So there's definitely like that big underlying theme here.
We jump forward to a track called Scattered, and again, starts our typical Green Day song, but it's a long song. It's 3 minutes and 2 seconds, which for this album is Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
The narrator's looking at old pictures of someone he used to love and realizes he still misses them as a person and even still loves them. Gradually, his regret and despair grow as he starts to understand that he needs to be with them. And admits all the mistakes he's made and is now willing to change. He believes life was purposeless without them. So that's... The last two songs I talked about were inspired by his wife, and now he's talking about another situation where, hey, I love this person, and it's not you. So that's hard to take.
It is. Yeah.
But, yeah, that would be a hard one to do. But then again, he's also been hung up on this one girl for several years, his ex-girlfriend who left to join the Peace Corps. He wrote like or six songs about her, and even as I think he wrote one of them on American Idiot too. The song "What's Her Name."
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, you know, he's still hung up on the one that got away, so to speak.
And again, mental health, man. You've got to heal yourself.
You've got to heal
yourself. Yeah, that is tough. And tough for both parties in that situation.
Yeah, because one person might have moved on and the other person might not have.
Mm-hmm. And then you're just having, as the new person in their life, you're having to deal with these skeletons and this baggage that... You know, wasn't revealed early on.
Yeah, and you've got to live up to something that you're not just to even...
Not even live up to somebody else, but to the idea of what somebody else would be now.
Yes. Yes.
You're never going to be able to compete with, like, exes because...
You're never
as far as, like... Oh, go ahead.
Nobody's going to be able to compete with the one that got away.
Exactly, yeah. That's a better way to phrase it.
But, But if they got away, they got away. You know, move on. Mm-hmm. It's easier said than done, but, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they got away. To love somebody who doesn't love you back, you have to... But that's a lot of internal learning how to love yourself that a lot of people don't do.
Going back to nice guys again.
I know, right?
We jump forward to a track called All the Time, which is... the shortest song on the album, And once again, the narrator's talking about his battle with alcohol addiction. And he's made it his goal to, like, a New Year's resolution to stop drinking, but always gives up and forgets about it. So, when he gives up his goal, the main reason is want to take another sip. So he doesn't really want to give it up. He just wants to carry on and say he's doing something, but keeps it going.
Yeah, it's definitely knowing what you should and what you want to do.
Yeah. And the narrator does feel he'll waste what's left of his life if he doesn't quit drinking, and the chances of drowning are the issue in alcohol, too. So he knows what he wants to do, but he can't bring himself to do it.
And I think that's the side of alcoholism that's hard for people who don't suffer from it to understand. That your coping mechanism to deal with all these feelings is, it's a spiral.
It's the one
as
thing,
is any kind of addiction.
Yeah. It's the one thing you need to get rid of to help you, and it's the only crutch that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's, he's pouring a lot of his heart in this album so far. Because so far, right, we've got, you know, his struggles with depression, because it's obvious in the words that he's writing. Mm-hmm. His anger at becoming stuck in a rut. The loss of a loved one, the one who got away, and he's dealing with it. And taking it out on his now current person.
Mm-hmm.
And throwing that in with the splash of alcoholism. Excuse the wording, but you know, it's he's opened up his heart a lot, which for this kind of scene you don't expect as much.
No, you don't, and it's brilliantly covered with the sound of it. That's I think something I've always kind of loved about a lot of Green Day is just, you know, some of my favorite songs are the ones that once you slow it down, you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh, right, we're about to get to one that. It sounds so happy. Actually, one of my favorites is not Green Day, it's not 90s, but Hey Ya by Outkast is that way.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, sorry.
No, you
go. Oh, shoot. like, this is, oh, crap. So, yeah, and I think, you know, the bands that I tend to like the most are the ones that tend to have very happy, you know, upbeat, poppy tunes, and then actually be real deep and real, maybe not depressing necessarily, although these certainly are. But yeah, just have a lot more depth to them.
Artists opening up themselves, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not because of anything more. I always thought that if you write a song, you put something into it, like make it make sense, make it something towards you, you know?
Well, writing what you know. I think in any kind of art or any kind of, you know, for screenplays or songs or any of that, like, if you don't have some realism to it,
yeah,
or like pull from your own life, it does have that same feel.
Okay. There you go.
Anyway.
So, let's move on to Worry Rock. And we were talking just, you know, what we were just talking about a second ago, this one's a little too happy for the subject matter. Somebody described former President George Bush as having the ability to say something with, you know, with a smile on his face. And what he was saying was like, you know, hey, a school just caught fire, and he'd have a smile on his face because he couldn't, you know, differentiate between it. This is what that sounds like. You know, it's we're talking serious about the frustration about causing obvious strain in a relationship, but let's do it in a happy way.
Yeah, and it's happy, not in that quite that same Green Day feel. Like, it's striking. I'm honestly not a huge fan of this one after everything I just said about, like, I don't know, that golden spot for me.
Well, it's like redundant, especially an arguing couple questioning whether or not they should still be in this relationship together, and the frustration between them is causing obvious strain, but what's left is their optimism that they believe that breaking up isn't the best way to solve this yet. So, you know, it's we're in a storm, let's weather it and see where it goes.
Yeah, and this is probably my viewpoint on that, where it's just, I've seen too many of my friends be stuck in this, like, if we love each other, we'll work it out. We'll always work through it. And it's like, yeah, it's not always the answer.
Sometimes you got to put a pin down on that one and call it good.
Yeah. So maybe it's more of the whole theme of the song that I'm just like, no.
Well, no, there's a song that I like called To the End by Blur, and it's on their album Park Life, and go listen to it if you haven't listened to it before. It talks about, you know, the end of a relationship, and they've made it to the end. That's one of the lyrics. It looks like we've made it to the end. And it's kind of a release of not arguing with each other, but two people realizing that, oh, this is it. You know, we're at the end point. And I guess what this is the track you would have before that. And it's coming to the end, but we're going to work through what we've got anyway. I'll try to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I mean, you're right. A bad relationship's a bad relationship, whatever way you look at it. You know, and it's sad that some people take a long time to figure it out.
Well, and I think the hardest part is when it's not a bad relationship, it's just not the right relationship.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's definitely the hardest situation to be in. And I think that's something that, you know, as the generations go on, settling for not a good relationship or not a great relationship is like, that's what you're searching for. You're not going to settle. Like,
yeah.
Not that, you know, everyone has settled, but it's not just you have to push through. Yeah. If it's not perfect, you have to push through. Not that any relationship's perfect, but it's recognizing, like, you know what, this is good, it's fun, but are we becoming better people because of it? Anyway, I kind of got on my little soapbox there. Apologies.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I like soapboxes. Next track is called Platypus or I Hate You, depending on which way you're looking at it. It's a very, very heavy and quick song that they go through. And, you know, it doesn't sound like Green Day at all. It sounds like, you know, well, it does sound like Green Day, but it sounds hard. Excuse me. It sounds harder for them than what they usually go in for. The narrator verbally attacks someone after they've had a bad experience in the past, mentioning that they not only hurt them, but they took pleasure in doing that pain to them. Now, this is their response to that pain, letting it backfire onto them and be forever haunted by the fact that everybody now hates them. So, from potty mouth language to death threats, the narrator wishes nothing but the worst of this person. They deserve everything that they get. So, that's mature. Oh, there's this thing that Sarah says is, if you wish something bad on someone, you will get it back. You get it back twice in return.
Yeah, no, that sounds like Sarah. Yes.
Yeah,
and I do agree with it. Yeah,
because I mean, you don't want to wish bad on anyone to begin with, but if you do wish bad on them, it's going to come back and haunt you.
It is, because you're really hurting yourself more than you're ever going to hurt others. Like, especially if you're just silently wishing it.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why I say have the day you deserve.
Yeah. Although, for self-loathing people like myself. No.
Somebody would say that to me, and it's like, oh, I deserve to have a day, because I'm just, yeah. That's one of the reasons.
I'm just chaotic neutral right here.
There you go. Some believe this is aimed at Tom Yohannan, the founder of 524 Gillam Street, a famous punk bar in LA, because the band were barred from playing there after signing for a major label. See, they signed for a major label but didn't change their sound.
Which is good for the major label to, like, not really force that.
Yes. But... yeah, that's one thing I hate about major labels. They don't know anything other than anything. They think they
don't.
Well,
yeah, it's like, if you sign, you like the sound, so you signed it, and then you change it.
And then wonder, like, why they're not selling.
Or you want to make every single album sound exactly the same. Right. That also doesn't really work.
No. You've got to change your sound up, and you've got to let people be who they be. That's one of the things that a lot of the UK bands did. They either went for smaller labels, they'd make less money, but they went for labels that give them creative control.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And there's plenty, like, beyond the record label, there's more lucrative ways to make money that you're not going to be handcuffed.
Right. Well, excuse me one second. Well, the amount of swearing in the bridge made sure the lyrics of this song were not printed on the album's lyric sheet. So, for the kids listening, a lyric sheet is what came in the CD or cassette tape that the album came in. And I'm not explaining what a cassette tape or a CD is, because you should know what they are.
I do.
There you go.
I wasn't sure if you were talking to me. I was like,
oh, no. But yeah, I think, I mean, it's a good song, but again, it didn't do much for me when I was listening to it earlier in the last couple of days. It's just a song.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next song is Uptight. And once again, we're going into a depressing narrator, battling both alcoholism and depression, having no hope in him. He believes his life is simply at a dead end. There is little for him to do except drown in apathy and become further a victim of his degrading life. Believing life is no longer worth it, the narrator considers suicide by gunshot his last desperate attempt to escape the hell he calls his life. That's heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, especially considering there were a lot of music based suicides in the 90s too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's just, the thing I like about it is it steals from Stevie Wonder.
I always love it. You can catch, like, almost surprising influence. It shouldn't be surprising, but because it's Stevie Wonder, and, you know, who is, makes great music, and almost nobody could argue with that. But yeah, it's always fun to see those influences creep up.
Yeah, and especially so blatantly too, though. I mean, he...
Oh yeah, because it's Uptight, right?
Yeah. I mean, Stevie's known for his team getting out there. He wanted... There was a song that Oasis put out on one of their albums on the first, like, 100 presses, and they had to pull it, called Step Out. They pulled it out because Stevie Wonder wanted 10% of the album's rights. Not the song's rights, the album's rights. So they pulled the song and hid it away and gave them 10% of the CD it was released on, which was a B-side to another song. I don't know which one it is off the top of my head. But so he wanted 10% of an album that sold 25 million copies. He got 10% of a single that sold 500,000. So there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I cannot blame Stevie Wonder in that. In that instance.
Stevie's awesome. Next we go to Last Ride In, which is a surf based instrumental. And it's one of only two instrumental the band would write. And I like this because it, like, brings mm-hmm. the mood down and kind of lets your brain rest for a couple of minutes. You know, there's no talk of suicide and depression and alcoholism.
Yeah, like, I feel like this album, like, the first two songs, I'm like, all right, I'm in. And then it's just 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, like, on my brain. Like, honestly, a lot of these, like, middle songs kind of get lost in my head where they get, like, jumbled.
Yes.
So, yeah, this Last Ride In is a nice reset.
Yes. And it is a good reset, too. It's I'm not a fan of instrumentals on albums. I don't mind instrumentals to begin with. But it's placed very, very well in the album to make it flow.
Mm-hmm.
So,
see, I actually really like instrumentals. I like them, especially if it's a long instrumental opening to a song that, yes, like, is almost pretty much its own song. But the way they placed it here, it does still work out. So, I like instrumentals.
There's a song by Dream Theater that is like 15 minutes long, and you might as well call it two different tracks because the opening is just the song played over and over and over again as an instrumental, and then boom, it's the actual song.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now the next two tracks we're gonna talk about side by side, because, and there's a reason for that. Okay, in American Idiot, the songs Jesus Suburbia and Homecoming were like five mm-hmm. tiny songs all mashed together as one big song, and these two are like that. They flow into each other really, really well. You could have had them as one track digitally, and it wouldn't have been any different. So, it's Jinx and Hashinka, yes. Hashinka, yes. That's, okay, sorry. I'm horrible at pronouncing words. This brings the pace right back up, and you got the drummer screaming as he counts in the song, and boom, you know, we're up and running again, back to, you know, we've had our drink break, and now we're back up to the fast-paced punk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The song deals with a supposed cursed narrator who was in a misery due to someone they who may have been in love with them. Yeah, that's what I said. Song details cursed narrator who is in misery due to someone who may have been they seem to be in misery that to apologize to that person, who later in the song is shown that their apology is sarcastic and wants that person to go away forever. So it's like, I don't know, a stalker situation, or maybe the narrator is the one that got away.
That's an interesting spin on it.
Yeah, thank you.
Just take the compliment, John, and move on.
Right. They're still dealing with low self-esteem. He tries to get this person to do whatever he deserves, as he didn't love her back. But to be cautious not to stick around too long in case they want to be cursed. Okay, I have no idea what that means. And I copied this from a fan site, so the person who wrote this must have known what they were talking about. But I'm guessing that what they meant to say was this is about somebody who is stalking them, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to let them down gently without trying to offend them. I guess,
or just trying to like say, you know, okay, fine, whatever you want, but let me warn you, I'm cursed. Like, I don't bring good.
Right.
Well,
this bleeds straight away into the next track. I mean, so that was Jinx, and then shit. Anyway.
Hashinka,
thank you. Starts off with he wonders if she knew about the secret. The narrator comes across a girl from around the time of his birthday and immediately starts liking her a lot. And he wonders if she knew about the secret crush on her, but would never get an answer. She would never see her again after their short time together. So, knowing it's too late to meet again with her, all he's left is a memory of her and wishes of a possibility she may have liked him back if only he told her. So this is an imaginary one that got away.
Yeah, or again, like building up somebody that you don't actually know.
Yes. Well, it's building up someone in your mind and having expectations of having them meet your expectations of them when there's no way of knowing if they could possibly even come close to meeting them.
Or not even necessarily meeting them, but it may not even be the same at that point. Yeah. You know, they may be just as great as you think, but not exactly as you think. And so those are always it's interesting to have like the back and forth on being on each side of it.
Yeah, I mean, that is a mark of a good songwriter, is to be able to, you know, put the same thing in different perspectives. You know, I mean, it's good to see the narrator switching roles for being the hunted rather than the hunter, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and I feel like most people have been on both sides of that, you know.
Yeah.
And to be able to draw from that and really recognize. And it's also nice to just not hear the one side of like, well, no one cares about me, no one loves me. It's like, no, they do. It's just not my person. Right. And, oh, God, leave me alone.
Right. Well, go ahead.
I don't know where I was going with that.
Sorry about that. But as I mentioned earlier, I do tend to talk over people, so I'm sorry.
I don't think you're talking over me. I think we talked at the same time.
Well, as I mentioned, this is like, you know, the two tracks of American Idiot. If they want a bigger example of these kind of songs blending into each other that just should be one song, look up Abbey Road. Because the last half of Abbey Road, you've got like six songs in a row that should just be one.
There's also quite a few songs on Jack's Mannequin's Glass Passenger. That's the same way.
There you go.
And it's beautiful. Yeah.
There you go. So a couple of some homework for you listeners out there. We're gonna have a pop quiz. I went back to speed again. Sorry about that. The next track, "Walking Alone," and begins with simple guitars, bass, and a harmonica. Interesting fact: Billy Joe Armstrong didn't know how to play harmonica before this song. So that's one way to test your musical chops is to, you know, do it in the studio, do it live.
Well, and it's like, that's how you can really tell, like, geniuses, where it's like, all right, I can pick up this instrument, I'll figure it out. Like, I know music theory, even if it's not official music theory. Like, I know it, and I got this.
There you go.
That's arrogance. That's how he got his way.
Oh, goodness me. The song looks at a narrator who's been outcasted by his past friends due to his behavior. After making a series of mistakes, his friends turn away from him, leaving them all alone and stuck with their mistakes. Oh, excuse me. And the narrator knows what he did wrong and doesn't blame anyone but himself. But he can't help feel bad about himself as he began to deal with the loneliness once again by drinking. Reflecting on his past mistakes, he knows the exact time he's trying to drown with his problems, and it's the same thing that causes problematic behavior. So that's, I guess this is him trying to pinpoint the exact moment where his behavior became a problem.
When in the spiral was it, you know, fun to turning into a problem? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll slight detour. I always remember when I was drinking and mine started to turn into a problem. It was a friend's birthday party and they refused to let me drink that night. So it was like, oh, okay, so that's a problem. That's a big problem. Okay.
Oh, I'm the problem.
Yes. At first you think, oh, well, thank you guys. You know, you think that much of me, but looking back, it's probably one of the best decisions that could have been made on my behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was me.
No, good on you for having friends that would do that. Yeah, no, I mean, it runs in my family. So it's something I've always, I struggled with, just knowing that I have a genetic predisposition and, you know,
yeah.
I see where it could easily happen to me and I have to, it's an ebb and flow on how well I handle it or not. But I at least am aware of it before it gets to the problem stage, but it still is a struggle. So
there you go. I mean, it's, I was on my way, let's put it that way. And that's part of the reason that being over here helped me too, because I got here at 20 and you can't drink here at 20.
So
I had 4 months of full sobriety, and after that I just stopped.
Oh my gosh, you were that young when you came over here? I remember meeting you then.
It's going to be 20 years next year of me being here.
What? That's crazy.
it's it'd be half my life. So, and I've still got both accents. So that's
I was like, I love Louisiana mixed with Welsh.
And nobody else can see it like that. They either see me speaking in one or the other. Nobody sees the both.
I think maybe because I'm not in either. You know, as the Texas girl, I'm like, oh yeah, I can hear both of them there.
There you go. But back on the Green Day, because that's why we're here.
Yes.
Tangents. I love going off on tangents. So. Don't worry about it. I'm not.
Well, I'm never going to rein you in, so good luck.
Okay, next up we got Reject. And this song, with commercial success of Dookie and the rise in popularity of Insomniac, Green Day's discography was starting to have more outreach. In 1996, an angry mother wrote to Billie Joe Armstrong and the band about the explicit content on their album Insomniac, which was given to her 8-year-old son as a gift from her grandmother. In the letter, the mother calls the tape one of the worst interpretations of an art form and complains about the ideas and influence on the young children, declaring they will no longer be buying any more of their albums. So after getting the letter, Billy Joe Armstrong wrote back saying he wouldn't change and he writes music for himself and is glad to hear they won't be buying any of his records again. So if we don't want you as a fan, go away.
I always love it when someone feels like art has to be for everybody or specifically for them.
Yes.
It's like, no.
And the worst thing is you have to change or I won't do this. No, you can't make people change like that.
No, not in any form of life, like any aspect of life.
Pieces of the letter would become lyrics of the song, such as "I do what I want and you do what you're told." So this is Billy Joe's letter back to them. The song meaning is what Billy wrote, saying he doesn't care what people think of him and he'd rather be considered a reject than follow in the footsteps of others. And for a song, it doesn't have a rhyming scheme, which I love. I love when songs don't have a rhyming scheme, because sometimes rhymes feel forced.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just let it flow naturally and as long as the melody line is okay.
Yeah, like, honestly, if it's done well, I don't even recognize it. Like, I don't even realize there's no rhyming scheme. I'm just like, all right. But I think I also tend to listen to more bands that don't have that, and so maybe that's why my brain doesn't even notice anymore. But
well, that's the other thing too. I mean, again, as we mentioned earlier, a good song is a good song, and you don't notice its imperfections. If there are
imperfections. Yeah, or what could be perceived
as
an imperfection, yeah.
So, next song is called Tick Back, and it's the shortest song on the album, just over a minute. And good lord, I could barely make anything out of this song earlier. It sounded like a bunch of guys got in the garage for the first time and just started beating their instruments and yelling into a microphone. I mean, it's... good lord.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I am glad it's only a minute long. Like, it's... Again, I don't dislike listening to it, but do I say I like it's a good song? Oh.
You won't go search... You listen to it if it's on, but you won't go search it off. Search it out.
Exactly, exactly. Like, if I'm listening to... It's not like I'm like skip, but yeah, I'm not really searching for it.
Well, apparently somebody understood it enough to write down a meaning, and the song expresses the narrator's hatred towards someone who believes pushed him too far. He believes the person irritates him too much. He dreams of revenge and is willing to resort to violence if it means he can take back any dignity that he had, no matter what. So
I wonder if they got the lyrics off of like the what you called it. the lyric sleeve.
Yes.
I mean, this is just reminding me of the days when I used to pull up lyrics online to like figure out what the hell people were talking about sometimes. But yeah.
I still do that now. Even for songs that I've listened to. See, that's the thing. It's a lot of music. The music will always stick with me. The lyrics will bounce off my brain. And that's for any song, even for bands that I call my favorite bands. Some of the lyrics, I couldn't tell you what their songs are about. I just know the tune.
I can tell you what I sing.
Right. Oh, they've been singing it wrong all this time. But so yeah, that's whoever got the meaning to this song, I salute you, because I couldn't figure it out. So, up next is King for a Day, which is ska punk, and I love this song.
I love it.
It's got the horns. It's very, very bouncy. And it's about mental health again. So, it's apparently the narrator talks about his interest in cross-dressing, which started at 4 years old trying on his mother's dresses. When he was found out, he was thrown into therapy by a father with the belief that cross-dressing is something a real man does not do. However, he disagrees and believing that anyone should be able to is free to dress however they feel like makes them feel comfortable, stating that the trope of doing things making you a not real man is outdated. Amen.
Which, honestly, for 97... Good on you, Billy Joe.
I mean, it's ahead of its time.
Like, I mean, there was, like, glam rock and stuff, but for, like, yeah, day to day.
Well, see, that's the thing. I can't remember who it was. The dude who wrote We're Not Gonna Take It, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. And he went into Congress all glammed up and, you know, dolled up. And, like, was one of the most intelligent witnesses Congress had ever had. You know, it wasn't about what was on the outside is what's on the inside, you know, and that man was an intelligent, right. Intelligent man. But yeah, those things are outdated. I mean, it's 2013 now. I mean, you know,
is it?
No, it isn't. It's 2023.
It is. You lost 10 years though, John.
I've lost a decade. Oh my. What was I doing in 2013?
But even in 2013, this would have been.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, my word. That's up there with Phil Collins and Phil Connors. No, I mean, even today, right? It's you've got to be able to, you know, you've got to be able to be yourself. And people should just deal with it. I mean, I've always wondered, right? My biggest question is, why does this bother you? Whenever you hear of, you know, this thing happening or that thing happening, and it doesn't affect anybody's life, it's like, why does it bother you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see that.
Absolutely agree.
You see that now with all the drag stuff going on in the in the world.
Oh,
you know?
Or one of Curtis's kids wants to go by a gender neutral name, and I have no problem with it. I'm like, okay.
I mean,
like, that's fine.
how does that bother you? Why does it bother you? You know, I mean,
they have family members that will refuse to do it. I'm like, why?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
It bothers me, and it just yeah. So I'm gonna get down off my soapbox before I take a before I go off.
That's
on
fine.
A,
like, as much as, like, I'm like, I don't understand this Gen Z and all of them. Like, they, for the most part, are way more open minded,
yes,
accepting than.
I mean, I consider myself open minded, but good lord, my mind is closed compared to some of the Gen Z stuff going on lately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not intentional. It's just every generation is more open-minded than the generation that preceded it. And,
no, for sure.
You know, but at the same time, I'm down with them.
I'm an ally.
I'm down with the kids. Oh, goodness me. So we're gonna go on to the song on the album. And
your favorite, huh?
Oh yeah, I love this song. I don't dislike this song. It's just played out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Good Riddance or Time of Your Life, depending on which way you look at it, read it. It's the only all acoustic song on the album, just guitars and violin. And it is about, it's the most punk thing that they've ever done when all their material have been spikier and more hardcore. So it's like the equivalent, you mentioned hair metal a minute ago, it's the equivalent of them doing their ballads, you know, because you always had that one ballad that they released. And This song is about Billy Joe Armstrong's ex-girlfriend who left to join the Peace Corps, hence why the song is called Good Riddance, to express his anger. And then this was used at every wedding, graduation, prom.
Yeah. Like, it was played, I'm sure, at my prom, and I'm sure at my graduation. Like, actually, before starting this, I was talking to Curtis about it, and he was like, yeah, that was my class song.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm sorry about that. it's because it's the song, and it's played out, and it sounds nothing like the rest of their work. I mean, the example I gave was Wonderwall. If you listen to some of Oasis's back catalog, Wonderwall is like sticks out like a thumb, like a sore thumb.
Right.
This
this is a song that people became familiar with Green Day with the ones that weren't in that. And then I felt like they were Green Day fans, and it's like not trying. I'm trying to gatekeep, but this was the song they knew. And I'm like, okay, like, you're a fan of this song. I can appreciate that.
And then they'd listen to another. I mean, imagine them listening to, you know, we were just talking about it. Imagine listening to Tick Back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, well, that doesn't sound like Green Day. No, that sounds exactly like Green Day. It's this that doesn't sound like Green Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and.
Although I have to appreciate really hearing Billy Joe's vocals. Like, it is nice to really hear him. But.
I mean, the lyrics do fit that it's the end of an adventure and the start of a new one, so I get why it was used at proms and, you know, weddings and stuff like that. It's just, man, read the room. That's not what it is. It's a guy telling his ex-girlfriend, for lack of a better term, "F you." That's all it is. And, you know, that's why they flipped the title to "Time of Your Life," because people were realizing this was going to blow up and be a huge song. I mean,
wasn't this on an earlier album? Like, I thought it was on, like, Kerplunk or something. No?
A version of it might have been.
I know it was re-recorded, but I feel like this was an earlier song that, once it was re-recorded, blew up. But yeah.
I mean, it's a good song, right? I'm not gonna crap on it all the time. It's a really, really good song.
Just like, I don't hate Wonderwall, but I get what you're saying as far as
yeah, it's just
what that song represents.
It's the song. It's like Creep by Radiohead. It's, you know, it's not representative of the band's work. It's a good song, but no. But yeah, "Con to Bill Joe Armstrong" is about their relationship, and "Con to the Fan Base," it will change from meaning to meaning depending on who you ask. However, in Tom Old Tradition, I'm going to take what the songwriter said about this one. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big screw off to his ex-girlfriend. I hope you
Which the whole rest of the album is pointing out how if she had stayed, maybe his whole life would have been different.
I never saw it like that until you just said it. That's a damn good point.
So I think this has as far as fit the album, but sound wise it just doesn't, and there's not a good transition.
No, it's just like, straight in. So, I mean, again, great song, but overplayed and not representative as the band as a whole. And for it to be their song, it's, yeah.
Yeah, the song, people, even if you don't know Green Day, you know this song is a little like, oh, okay, well, at least until American Idiot came out, and then I feel like it got, I mean, it's still the song, like the most generic or commercial song we have, but.
But it was trumped by a lot of the stuff on American Idiot in terms of,
yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Which I think Wake Me Up When September Ends was the ballad Green Day should have been known for. Yes. Like, that is more Green Day, but yeah.
And I love that song too. Mm-hmm. Actually, I love American Idiot. It's a damn good album.
It is. It really is. Like, that's one I need to go back to, because I think I was, when I first listened to it, I was so caught off guard because I was just honestly ready or like prepared for more of the same. And, you know, it's like that expectation violation. And right. It's like, what is this? And then the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. So, yeah.
Sweet.
Anyway.
So, last track on the album is called Prosthetic Head, and it brings the energy back up like a typical Green Day song. So,
that's the other thing, too. Like, I wish they kind of just ended the album with Good Riddance if they were going to put it in there. But anyway.
Yes.
Like, it feels weird to suddenly go right back to.
A lot of American bands do that, I notice. Like, the natural ending point of an album, yeah. And then they put one more track in there. One of the biggest examples was R.E.M. They did a song called I'll Take the Rain, and that should have been the end of the album, and then they released a song called Beach Ball straight after it, which is a dreadful song to begin with. But Prosthetic Head brings the energy back up. It's the author has run into a person who obviously over-relies on cosmetics or surgery to look good. Their reconstructed face is described as horrific, and the author is willing to label them like they're an alien. He believes that the effects of surgery are so bad he can't even use various parts of his body anymore, but nonetheless tells the person to shut up. The song delves deeper into what it would take to attempt to make this person good-looking when it's all to help mask their low self-esteem issues. The more that is described by the author about the cosmetic subject, the more the author hates them. That's not nice.
No, this one doesn't. Mm-mm.
This one's mean.
It is mean-spirited. It's again, this doesn't affect your life. Why do you have a problem with it?
Exactly.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's no. Just. This was a hit in Germany, surprisingly.
Not surprisingly. Really?
I'm surprised it was a hit. Not necessarily not necessarily the in Germany part. It's the hit part that surprised me more.
No, I actually know a few Germans. I'm sorry, but no, just like as far as the gender roles, a lot of times are different.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good way to end the album, but like you said, it should have been they should have flipped these two tracks around and just ended it on Good Riddance. Because you either got to end on a big note or you end on a emotional note. And I think Prosthetic Head is not a big or emotional note to end an album on.
No. Or at least move Good Riddance to, like, right before Last Ride In to, like, have that wave. But yeah, definitely still not end with Prosthetic Head. It's just not. No. King for a Day would have been an amazing way to end this album, actually.
Yeah.
Like, let's go for it. But
do a little ska punk. Okay, I think this personally is a 7 out of 10 album.
Yeah, I would definitely not go higher than 7 just because they've had, you know, 10 of 10 up there at least too. But yeah, I would say probably 6.5 for me.
Okay. I mean, it's a good album and it shows the maturity of their sound, what they wrote about. And it does do a lot of alcoholism and depression and them holding their hands up and saying this is who I am, and I need help, or I'm working on it, or give me time, you know, to do it, or to get over it, I should say, not to do it, because like we mentioned, Good Riddance being thorn in my side, because I'm not, it's a good song, but the band have released better, and the sound is not the sound, and it shouldn't be the song. The length of all the songs make the whole 18 tracks manageable. Had they been normal length songs, this would have been a slog to get through, but you can get through it in an hour without any issues.
Yeah, that's like the perfect length for an album to me. It's right around an hour 15.
Yeah. So that is Green Day. That is, I forgot the name of the album, Nimrod. It's one of those days today.
Yeah. So, that's all right. I do have to say, like, we're kind of talking about where they were when they recorded this, and I got to see them live probably, it was probably the year 2013 this year that I saw them live. But it's funny how they grew into that fame over time. And I think American Idiot, being able to be themselves and really hit commercial success, help them do that. But it was one of the greatest shows I've seen. Just the confidence, the fact they've been doing it for so long. But Nimrod, I think it's better than I remember. To me, it was just kind of like the little brother to Dookie. Right. I was like, all right. But there are definitely, there's variants here, and it's the songs that, it's weird, like we both were like, well, we want things to sound like Green Day, but then it's the songs that don't sound like Green Day that really.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, it's not necessarily the songs that sound like Green Day, it's the fact that they tried to make something new, and they did end up with a lot of Green Day tracks.
Because there's still comfort in that, and there's still a little bit of, you know, and kind of like, I forgot which one of them said it, but they didn't want to change too much too soon.
That's one of their songs. But no, I get what you're saying. It's they wanted to change, but they wanted to still do what was comfortable to them, and I think, musically, they didn't change that much, but lyrically, they did.
Yes, you do start seeing beyond just this, like, a lot of what pop punk was at the time. Like, it's definitely not superficial lyrically, and this is definitely paving the way for the later albums.
Yes.
For the music to kind of catch up to the lyrics themselves.
There you go. And they did catch up with them on Warning, and they overtook them on American Idiot.
So. For sure.
For sure. All right. I think we're going to leave it there. Amanda, thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. I'm going to be back
here. Thanks again for having me.
Not a problem. You have an open invitation. There is a couple of things I need to announce, so I'll do that here in a couple of minutes, and I will talk to you guys soon. Sincere thank you to Amanda Morrison for appearing on this podcast. I know she's been busy, and I appreciate the time and effort that she spent with us. She has an open invitation to appear on the podcast anytime she wants to when we have a subject that suits her. And anybody who wants to be on the podcast, by the way, email becausemaybepodcast@gmail.com. I'll try and accommodate you as best I can. See what we can do. All you need is an internet connection and the ability to talk. And a microphone, so I know these are simple requests, the ability to talk and the ability to zoom in, and I say zoom generically, and I'll explain to you if you want to be on here. Amanda has an open invitation, like I said, and like I said, anybody wants to come on here, just shoot me an email and let me know, becausemaybepodcast@gmail.com, and I will do my best to accommodate you, okay? Over on our YouTube and Twitch channels, go to twitch.tv/adeadstreamer. That's where you'll find our streaming service. That's where you'll find everything that I do streaming. And we've been streaming Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. Now, Twitch doesn't keep the videos for more than a week. So what I've been doing is I've been uploading them to YouTube. See? Smart, smart, smart person. And this is our highest watched series ever on YouTube. I'm only four episodes into it, I think. As a time of recording, I'm thinking off the top of my head. Yeah, it's four episodes in at the time of recording, and it's already been our biggest series to date, beating out the Adventures of Edit Man that we did with the WWE SmackDown 2. So I appreciate everybody who's taking their time out to watch it. I thank you for your time. These are 2-hour videos, so, you know, you guys are sitting down and getting some premium content, let me tell you. Spells of 20 minutes of me going, yeah, that's a good one. But no, seriously, all joking aside, thank you everybody who's taking the time to watch it. Go check out our YouTube channel. The link is in our description, in our link tree. And yeah, that's where you'll find a whole bunch of stuff. We got the 90s Gamer on there. We've got clips of the 90s podcast. And we upload each and every single podcast 1 week after it's released on our feed. So that if you watch it, if you have time to watch on YouTube and so on and so forth, okay? And that is it for this season. It's been a split season because I had my nasal surgery done. But yeah, I wanted to close this on a high note, and I think this is a good time. All the episodes that I had planned from this point forward were season 10 to begin with, and I just wanted to do them all together at season 9. But I figured no, that was the time to call it good. But we will be back on July 2nd. Now, I'm not sure if that's going to be the start of season 10 or not. Probably will be, because I've got a little bit of research to do and I haven't been bothered to do it yet, but I've only got 5 episodes to finish researching, so yeah, that's not too bad. But yeah, season 10 will start on July 2nd, I think, but even if it doesn't, we are going to be here on July 2nd to talk about a 1996 movie. It's the Independence Day weekend, so what better time to talk about Independence Day? Yes. So, and I think it's on the 20-something anniversary. I don't know. I don't follow these things. But yeah, Independence Day, July 2nd, okay, on the 24th anniversary of the movie. And we're basically putting it out there the day the aliens came. Yeah, not the day the aliens were destroyed, the day the aliens came. So that's July 2nd coming up, okay? And I want to thank you guys for listening this season, too. We've had some real, real good episodes, I think. Some of our better work, I think. And not only that, some of the better numbers that we've had too. I want to thank our new listeners. We are listened to around the world. I still can't believe that the places that we're listened to are just, you know, I have a worldwide audience. It's not a great audience. It's not a great size audience, I should say, but it's still worldwide, and I appreciate every single one of you taking the time out of your day to listen to our ramblings and such. I want to thank Sarah, Greg, and Amanda for taking the time out of their busy schedules for coming on. I know each and every one of them has their own reasons for being super busy, and I appreciate them for taking the time to talk to this little old podcast. And that's it, everybody. So go ahead and check out becausewenetwork.com for our archives. If you want to listen to some older episodes, go check out Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's where you find all the latest news and what's happening. And don't forget to check out Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. That's where you'll find everything that we do, okay? Everything that we do is on YouTube. Everything that we do podcast-wise is on one of those streams, especially if you just stumble across this and you usually listen to podcasts on Spotify and you want to listen to this on Apple. So, yes. So my throat is going. That's another reason why I've slowed the season down a little bit. My throat is not acting up the way it's supposed to. So that is it. I'm gonna miss you guys. Be back in a couple of months, okay? Keep the house clean. Wear a mask. Get injected. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know me. Safety first and everything like that. Stay safe. Peace and love. I'll see you next time. Take it easy, everybody. Bye.